Thank you, and thank all of you for joining the call today, and thank you indeed for the speed at which several of you managed to get out supportive notes this morning. Jeff, myself, and all of the team here at Legal & General are delighted with our results. Very strong performance in operating profit at a group level, but we're also delighted with the performance of all of our divisions and even the subdivisions within the divisions. Not only did we perform well in the pandemic, and just from managing our staff, managing our customers, and delivering a resilient performance last year, which we labelled a pause year, it's great to see us returning to normality in a sense that we're driving forward in earnings per share and, of course, in ROE. Our ROE performance at 22% was outstanding, really, when you consider that we're still operating under a pandemic. We're very much believers in investment-led growth is the solution to both the UK and the US economic growth over the long term, and we're playing an ever-increasing role in investing in real assets, creating real growth, real jobs, and real wages growth here in the UK. I guess our capability to scale up businesses is coming through in LGC for the first time materially, and I know one or two of you have been talking to Jeff about that this morning. You know, we've been on that journey for a number of years. We've said that this year that LGC would be a breakthrough year, and indeed that's what we've delivered. And it was terrific yesterday to sign the deal with the NatWest Group Pension Scheme, where they've become co-investors in our later life business. Why this is strategically important is if you look at our build-to-rent business, the partners there were PGGM, you know, a very prestigious and incredibly well-run Dutch pension scheme. And we've seen this sort of activity from European pension schemes, but particularly from US and Canadian. We're getting increasingly confident that they will see the same thing happening here in the UK and that we will play an incredibly big role in getting these partners to help us scale up businesses, not just here in the UK, but increasingly international. We are pleased with our performance in the US, in Europe, and in Asia, where we're seeing, again, this sort of scaling up impact that's having on our results. I guess our biggest challenge, and it's a shared challenge with all of you, it's a collective challenge really, is how do we get financial services re-rated in the UK? You know, we've seen it happen in the United States, and we're not the only industry where there's a difference in rating between the US and the UK. We're hoping over time, as we continue to deliver outstanding results, that gap will disappear and that we'll see wider recognition for the quality and the growth of our earnings going forward. That's all I was going to say by way of introduction. We'd like now to move to questions, and the first question is from Louise Miller at Morgan Stanley. Louise.
So the LGR new business margin was down versus the first half of 2020. How should we be thinking about the margin for the full year? Should it be similar to the first half, or should we be looking at more of the 2020 or 2019 margin? At LGI, you have about £30 million of that FY20 mortality provision left. I mean, do you have any concerns that this is going to be sufficient, given the outlook for flu deaths in the second half? You know, we're hearing that these might be a bit heightened versus previous years. And then finally, I was having a look at your sensitivity analysis on your Solvency II stresses. On the credit migration stress, this seems to have moved a bit since FY20 compared to the other ones. Is there any particular reason for this, or is it nothing to think about? Thanks.
I think, Jeff, those are all for you.
Yeah, thanks, Louis. LGR new business margin, I mean, you know, we know we said we traded very well last year, especially in the first half around traded credit when spreads were pretty volatile. That helped us with the margin, plus there was probably a bit less competition. Certainly we were demanding more return on our capital for putting it to work in much more uncertain times. The level is, it's about, what, 8.4% for Solvency II new business margin, so it's definitely in a normal range for us. So I'd say, you know, we'd look to continue to deliver that sort of level of returns, which is really in line with what we've seen 19 and what we're seeing in the first half this year. Obviously, as you all know, it does vary a little depending on, you know, the duration of what we write and the exact assets that we're applying at any point in time. And we continue to source, you know, very, very good assets and to manufacture those ourselves. LGI, yeah, there's 30 million left. There was obviously a big impact in Q1 in particular in the US due to COVID. We followed the same methodology in terms of projecting out the IHME and, you know, we're within that and believe there's a little bit of prudence based on that. Clearly, there's a big range of uncertainty around that. There is some sense, but with not a huge amount of data, that potentially any penetration of adverse claims into the insurance market will be slightly less due to some of the socioeconomic impacts. So certainly we were comfortable with that level of provision going into the second half. And as ever, of course, we don't make any allowance for any potential excess deaths in the annuity portfolio, which acts as extra prudence for us. And the credit migration, are nothing really to worry about there. That's just the impact of the maths, you know, in terms of your starting point, in terms of rates and where spreads are, and that moved the sensitivity, but nothing's changed at all in the underlying portfolio there or the stresses.
Okay, thank you, Louise. Thanks for your questions. Next is Larissa.
Good morning, everybody. A couple of quick questions from our side, please. Two on bulk annuities and then one on LGC. Actually, two on LGC, if you don't mind. On bulks, can you help us understand what is currently driving the dynamics and what gives you confidence that the 2H volumes should come through? Related to that, basically, do you think there's a lag effect from a COVID shock last year or are there other factors? Then the two on LGC. How robust is the pipeline? Which areas are you seeing particularly attractive opportunities? Is it mainly a housing play, or are there other areas that are coming through? And then secondly, can you give us some color, please, on how much of the 250 million in earnings related to mark-to-market on the revaluation of the portfolio?
Yeah, thanks for those questions. I'll take the first two, and Jeff can take the third one. Just in terms of markets for PRT, we broadly expect the market to be about the same size this year as it was last year, so that there isn't really a macro COVID impact. We're strongly seeing a stronger pipeline in H2, hence the reference in the release to the 2 billion that we've either closed already or in exclusives for the second half of the year. We will retain our financial discipline in the second half of the year, as we've always done in previous years, but we're very confident that the long-term size of the market opportunity in the UK and indeed internationally for the business. So the numbers that Jeff and I have used in numerous other presentations, the 40 to 50 billion over 4 to 5 years, are absolutely the same as they've been over the last few years. In terms of LGC, it's across the board. I mean, you know, we invested in a number of these businesses several years ago, and whether that's in the various housing businesses, the urban regeneration businesses, the energy businesses, the SME finance, that's both in venture capital, but also in Pemberton, they're all doing incredibly well. They're all performing very, very strongly. And we're very confident that they'll continue to perform strongly, even more so because of the third-party capital that we're bringing in at scale into these businesses, which, you know, I think is a good thing, not just for us and for our shareholders, but actually for the UK economy and elsewhere, that big pension funds and big asset managers want to co-invest alongside us. You know, we've done a lot of the heavy lifting, built the management team, built the market opportunity, have scaled up these businesses. and they're very attractive investment opportunities for other people. Jeff, do you want to take the third question?
Yeah, sure, on the mark-to-market for the 250. It sort of depends what you mean by mark-to-market. You know, the direct investment, the alternative, those are underpinned by either transactions we've seen or pending transactions we'll be talking about in the second half. But in terms of the profit there, yeah, there's $55 million from, you know, the traded portfolio. Clearly, that is a pure mark-to-market. We can't predict what repeats on that, if you like, in the second half. And we wouldn't necessarily expect to see some of the VC continuing to move at the same rate in the second half of the first half, but we'd expect those to keep growing over time. But, I mean, Nigel covered it to some extent. The others are, you know, good quality operating businesses and underlying businesses with growth, you know, so Carla, affordable housing, build to rent, Pemberton. We'll continue to see revenue growth there and sales growth, and you know, those are how we put valuations on that. Carla is real profits at the point we sell a house. That's the only time we get profits coming through. And so, you know, in terms of second half, we wouldn't double that 250 number. What there are strong underlying businesses we continue to see growing.
Yeah, if you look at slide 28, you'll see that the traded portfolio delivered $87 million profit in 2020 and $55 in 2021. So that's not been the source of profit growth, but it's the really high performance of the other the businesses. We now pass on to Andy Sinclair.
Thanks, Nigel. Morning, everyone. And you're right, these are good results. The business is clearly in good shape. Three questions for me, if that's okay. Firstly, was on LGR. You've talked about this assured payment policy as being your capital light PRT product. Just really wondered if you can tell us a little bit more about how the capital intensity and margins differ versus traditional PRT business. Secondly, on LGI, I thought there were really good protection sales growth in H1 in both the UK and the US. Just really wondered if you can tell us a bit more about the outlook here. What sort of growth do you think is sustainable? And third, on LGC, I was possibly a little bit surprised to see that the LGC investment portfolio AUM seemed to only be around flat year to date. Just wondered, is this due to investments maturing and being passed on to other parts of the business, or what's going on? Just could you give us a little bit more colour here on how the alternatives and trading portfolios have moved year to date? Thanks.
Jeff, do you want to take the first and the third question, and I'll take the second?
The APP, as you say, it's sort of capital light. It's really along the way on the journey, and it doesn't pass on the longevity risk. It allows schemes to really partake in the direct investments that we put to work on our own LGR portfolio and gets them to buy out sooner. You know, so we had a good example of that where we'd done a transaction with AIB and under APP, and we've now moved to full buyout on that. And so they really get exposure to our credit expertise. They transfer that risk to us, and we're able to deliver the returns to them that they lock in, and then they eventually move further down the track to that. So it looks very attractive to us and allows the schemes to move earlier. You know, clearly the returns meet all our hurdles. You know, we don't price in any differential way. We put the capital to work and get the returns, you know, not broadly in line with what we get from the rest of the business. We allow for it in that way. LGC investment portfolio, yeah, there was just nothing particularly going on there. I mean, we were expanding the portfolio. It grows. We had reduced the traded portfolio, as Nigel said, in terms of off-profits. You know, you could see less reliance on that. So that had reduced, but otherwise, no, there was nothing. And now we look to continue to grow the alternative investments. We give views on where we think that will be. We usually put to work a good few hundred million in any year, whether that's 200, 300, 400, 500 million. And we continue to do that. We continue to transfer from the traded portfolio. So there's nothing particularly going on there.
on LGI, thank you, Andy, for your kind words. Over the years, they've not always been so kind about LGI, but Bernie Hickman, Steve Griffiths, and the rest of the team, both in the UK and the US, have done an outstanding job, particularly in paying claims during the sadly during the pandemic. But we did see strong growth in both the UK and the US, and we expect it to continue in both the UK and the US. We're becoming increasingly optimistic about the United States and the progress that we've been making there, and we're strengthening the management team, building out its capabilities as we speak. You know, we think the US market will begin to follow the UK market in that there will be greater use of technology. It's always been quite a long way behind the UK in terms of use of technology, and the fact that we're technology leaders here in the UK stands us in great stead in the United States. So I'm becoming increasingly confident about our capabilities in the United States to grow the business. Next question is from Cole.
Thanks, Nigel. So just a first one on LGC, obviously strong results today and obviously a lot of emphasis on LGC in the presentation slide. So quite a strong expectation in terms of future growth going forward. If we think about it from a cash flow perspective and particularly upstreaming cash to the group holding company, you know, when we think about LGR, it's a very consistent track record of upstreaming, you know, relatively stable cash to the group. Can you just touch on LGC's remittance track record and what we should expect going forward in terms of upstreaming capacity there? And then just secondly, on the LGRI business, obviously Laura moving across to LGC, I didn't see anything announced in terms of a successor for the CEO position of LGRI. I'm just wondering if you can update on the process there, if that's okay. Thanks.
Jeff, do you want to take the first one? I'll take the second.
Yeah, sure. LGC cash flows. Yeah, it's interesting. It's a combination. Clearly, you know, when you revalue a VC portfolio, you don't get the realization straight away. But there's a lot of operating businesses that are, you know, real profits and real cash at that point in time. You know, Cala, there's 70 million plus PBT in the first half. Those are real houses, real completions, money in the door. And so clearly in the past few years, we've been investing in the business to grow those. And so, you know, we've been helping the portfolio mature and adding our liquid resources into that. But then as those mature, they start to throw off either realizations with third-party money, a bit like the NatWest Pension Fund and other examples, or we sell them as they become mature anyway. Or alternatively, if they're maturing, yielding type equity, we're happy to move those across into the insurance company, which then moves the liquidity around the business. So there's a different profile across the board. But, you know, we do see that as those businesses mature, we see them throwing up a lot more cash than obviously has been historically when we've been growing them through the realization, through third-party money, and simply businesses like Carla becoming, you know, mature operating businesses that pay dividends.
Yeah, so in big picture terms, Colm, you know, it's just like any normal regular business, you know, NGR and stuff like that. You know, we've invested in assets. Those are operating assets. And, you know, we've helped manufacture those assets, but then they become cash flow producing on a go-forward basis, similarly with Pemberton and other areas of the business. On LGRI, yes, I'm pleased to report that actually the Kerrigan has now arrived in Asia. It's taken a while for him to get there. He's moved from quarantine in Thailand to quarantining in Hong Kong, so that's been a journey. It's been non-trivial interviewing international candidates, to be fair, during the lockdown period, and we've certainly been looking across the world for candidates for the LGRI position, and as you said, although she's on holiday today, but calling in, Laura's just recently taken the reins for LGC, but we're comfortable with where we are in terms of finding successors in LGRI. Next question is from Credit Suisse.
Hi, it's Farooq Khani from Credit Suisse. Thanks very much. Just turning again to the APP and ISS, the alternative LGR PRT solutions, can you talk about the sort of pipeline, and do all of these inevitably end up in a buy-in and buy-out when they mature? Second question is, you talked about the CMI-19 transition not having an immediate explicit release, but there being kind of a margin release. I mean, will this be actually equivalent in size to what happened with the CMI-18 experience for the purposes of our modeling? And then lastly, on LGC, can you just talk about the profit implications of the third-party capital? So is it simply that you need that $14 billion to get to $5 billion alternative assets, or is it that you will get realizations which improve cash, or is there some other margin that you can make on that? Thanks.
Jeff takes the first two, and I'll take the third question.
Sure, yeah. I've heard. The APP, ISS, there's a good, strong pipeline on that. Trustees have lots of responsibilities. They want to understand when they're doing different things. There's been good precedents now in the market around APP, both third party, us doing it with our own scheme, etc. And the ISS, we have a good number of conversations around those. It's interesting, some of them, you have long conversations about these alternative structures. They suit them at the time along their journey, and then suddenly they have a windfall, the markets move, and actually say, we can afford a buyout now, so let's jump straight to that. And that has happened to us. But they're very useful tools to have along the way. That almost then answers the second part of your question, if we do our job properly and the schemes manage themselves, they would all eventually be run into buyouts. We wouldn't expect people generally to be putting these in place to sit on them forever. There may be exceptions to that, but they would be looking to buy out. So we see this as really helpful on that whole de-risking journey. As we say many times, we're the only ones that start all the way at the beginning in LGIM and move all the way through. And so we continue to build on that. And 50% of the cases were from LGIM this time. The CMI-19, we were prudent in the way we implemented CMI-18. And we've obviously already had the 19 table at the time. We know broadly where that sits, and so we see that being pretty neutral to implement, as neutral as you can be when you've got such a big book and you're dropping in some new tables. But we have, built some prudence in. We think we're conservative given the uncertain outlook on data for 2020, 2021, and so we do anticipate some of that prudence, some of those excess deaths flowing through the P&L for the next couple of years, as we've said. In terms of size, it's very hard to predict, but we'd expect it to be, probably in the sort of high tens of millions, which is not dissimilar to the lower end of some of the longevity releases that we've had. We could get as high as 100 million flowing through, but that will be through P&L as we release these over time. Combination of some of the experience coming through and the prudence released as 20 and 21 data and what we believe about what's happening in terms of delayed hospital appointments, et cetera, and treatments come through and we understand the market and the outlook on mortality a bit better.
On LGC, we have a variety of businesses, some of which are outlined in the pack, which will give you case studies. And as you have seen, we're having an investor day in October, so we can go through everything in a lot more detail. So this is really just a sampler for ahead of that. But the model is really that we put up equity, we hire a management team for a particular sector, we then invest in the business. And Pemberton's a good example of that, NTR, build-to-rent, affordable housing, venture capital, data centers, later life living. And we ultimately look to get fees from alternative asset management platform fees, is the expression that we use in-house, from these activities. So if you take something like Pemberton, of the funds that they have under management, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10% are actually our funds. You know, the rest are from their 120-plus LPs. And we think this model works incredibly well for us, and we can scale it up brilliantly well. And so we've just got to continue repeating that. And, you know, data centers is another area that we, you know, we think we can scale up on a go-forward basis by bringing in third-party capital. As Jeff mentioned, we may realize some of that value on a go-forward basis. You know, there's obviously market mutterings around Podpoint, which is one of our many, in fact, our 300 different investments that we have in you know, started to scale up. Businesses, you know, there's huge demand for electric vehicle charging. We have another business called Onto, which is our electric vehicle leasing business. All of these have been scaled up, and it's, you know, demonstrating value, realizing value, and building revenue from third parties, which are all part of the narrative and the economics going forward. Next question is from Oliver.
Good morning. Excellent results. Well done. The first question is, I'm assuming that the guidance you're giving for the full year is off last year's 2218 figure. And if that is the case, then it looks as if you have to make somewhere close to 1.4 billion in the second half. And I'm just trying to sort of work out where that is, because if you're not, if you're only talking about this sort of smoothed release from longevity reserves of maybe 100 million, it's quite hard. And particularly if you're seeing LGC being lower in the second half, where's the delta to that 1.4 billion in the second half? Second question is on Elgin. I can see an excellent ETF margin on new net inflows, but how does the margin on new flows, revenue margin on new flows, compare to the 7 bps or so that you're getting across the book as a whole? And then thirdly, on LGI, you talk about growth. I'm talking of the UK business. You talk about sort of growth in sales every year, and generally you have been growing that business. But actually, almost every year, we also see a decline in the release from operations. And I know that's something to do with tax. But I'm wondering, when do we see the release from operations actually growing in line with your group targets?
Jeff, do you want to take the first and the third, and I'll take the second question on Elgin?
Sure. Yep. Hi, Robert. Thanks. In terms of the op profit, we certainly, you know, expect to see that across the metrics, the continuing operating profit from continuing divisions, the total op profit. You know, we've always focused on excluding longevity releases. We would see those numbers coming through strongly overall. And don't forget, of course, you know, with the strong investment variance, that will flow through to EPS growth overall. And so, you know, we don't focus so much on that longevity release. It'd probably be a bit too much detail to say where the number looks compared to that. But we're looking at the underlying businesses expecting to deliver profits in those double-digit returns across the board there.
Can I just sort of can I quickly just, but I mean, just to be clear, you are looking, but the guidance you're giving would imply 24-40 million of operating profit in 2021 as a whole. I mean, that's the right figure, isn't it?
I think we just need to be careful on where we're putting the guidance around that. As I say, and if you flow it through from, you know, the double-digit growth for the full year across both continuing and the op profit, certainly excluding longevity releases. And then we would look to show growth overall. With the growth below that, you get good EPS growth as well then.
I'm still confused, sure. I'm having to say. You say in the statement that you're looking for double-digit growth in operating profits over the year as a whole. Is that from last year's 2218? Or what does it actually mean?
Yeah, we look to deliver the growth. We deliver growth from the total number from last year. and will deliver good double-digit growth of profit, excluding the longevity releases. A combination of those deliver both good growth on all of those metrics, and then that delivers very strong EPS growth overall.
Yeah, we're not trying to give explicit absolute number here, but the direction of travel that you're going through, Oliver, we would say yes to the, if you're looking for a one-word answer, to where we want to get to, and it's double-digit growth. Should I take the Elgin question? Yeah. The Elgin question, you know, Michelle's articulated, you know, a very comprehensive strategy for modernize, diversify, and internationalize. Part of that diversify is building out some higher yielding, higher margin products. And if you go to the detail of the results, you'll see that there were very strong international flows across the business. We're doing incredibly well in the UK, Europe, and indeed in Asia for the business right now. So we're very happy with that. But we're making fantastic progress in things like our award-winning high-yield debt team, our fixed income team, has just done an amazing job in the last few years. Our emerging market debt team, exactly the same. And ETS, which we highlight for the first time, having made a bolt-on acquisition a few years ago, is seeing tremendous growth in revenue. And these are all, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 basis point types of products. And therefore, as we build these out over the next few years, we should see an acceleration of revenue from these high yielding, higher margin products. We do have to invest more. You know, part of that's regulatory driven, part of it's from the fact that we are expanding into new product areas and internationalizing the business. But we'd hope going forward that the growth in revenue would be greater than the growth in costs, which is what we haven't achieved in the last few years in Elgin. But the current, the still rather new management team that Michelle's pulled together are really working incredibly diligent on these areas.
The LGI question, as you say, yeah, I mean, the biggest impact there has been a tax impact. You know, we sold mature savings, effectively all term business been taxed on a profits basis as opposed to the old, good old-fashioned Blagab business, and that's been the main impact overall on that. There is some other second-order impacts, and, you know, there's some things we do between what's reported. We've optimized some of our U.S. business, historic new business financing. Some of that appeared in U.K., and that's been moving around. But generally, the underlying biggest impact has been the tax pile, along with the other small items. So, you know, we see across the board, in some ways it's better to look across the LGI at the top level. That's where we see the true picture coming through because of the way we use our different entities, and that shows the growth. And, you know, that continues to be that we see it in the OSG of the underlying as well, which is a good sign for us. Obviously, we don't split that out for you guys, but we do see that coming through. So that continues to grow in line with that.
Okay. Next question is from Ashik at JP Morgan.
Yeah, thanks. And morning, Nigel. Morning, Jeff. Just a few questions I have. I mean, just to go back on all these questions, sorry for this again on operating profit. I mean, if I understand correctly, what you're saying is operating profit will grow at double digit, but before last year's mortality releases, so which the base is $2 billion basically. On that, it will grow double digit. Now, what I'm trying to understand is if it grows double digit, then you're just recovering back the COVID impact from last year, which was stated at $228 million. So, I mean, are we talking about some underlying growth as well? Or are we just missing the numbers? Like, it's not 2.2 billion. We are talking about 2.4 billion, which is on the headline profit number of last year. So that's one thing would be great to get some color about, like in terms of numbers. Second thing is on LGC, sorry, clearly the first half profit was very strong, no doubt about it. But would you be able to give some color as to what sort of say run rate profitability we should assume for annual, like normal year for, let's say, next year onward, etc., or say if you can give us some return hurdles for the alternative asset, like in this half it was 10%, but like normally it is like your expectation is you generate 5%, 6%, 7%, something like that. And third question is, I mean, the PRA quiz is out on the UK solvency. I mean, on one hand, they are very optimistic on risk margin to getting reduced, but on the other hand, they are putting a bit more default stress on the matching adjustment, especially for illiquid assets. So any early thoughts that you have on that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Jeff's going to take the first and the third question. I'll take the second.
Yeah, I mean, we shouldn't be giving too much guidance directly on the numbers, but to spell it out, we see good, strong underlying operating profit growth of all of the businesses in a double-digit level. And so we continue to deliver that across the divisions. We will deliver that growth, which is what we have done historically. The longevity releases have always been considered one-off and excluded from those metrics. However, if we deliver that for across the businesses, we would still see growth on the overall operating profit level. And when you combine that with what we're delivering below as well, we would consider that will then deliver strong EPS growth, which is what we're intending to deliver. So there's good, strong underlying growth of all of the divisions, which is what we've historically delivered. There are one-offs around longevity releases, which we're not taking through and not included in those numbers. But we would expect to see overall operating profit growth despite that. And then that would translate into strong EPS growth as well. LGC?
Yeah. See, we've got 3.4 billion at the moment in these alternative asset platforms. We've set a target return of 8 to 10% for those assets. We've said that in the presentation that 3.4 billion will increase to 5 billion, in which case we would expect £400 to £500 million of LGC profit coming out in the next, 2 to 3 years. And that's broadly the direction of travel that you can use for your models. We're going to give you a lot more detail on how this all fits together in October and try and do a lot more work for you guys to make it even more transparent as to what we're doing. Clearly, this is a really important part of our growth driver, but it's part of the three businesses working together, LGIM, LGR, and LGC. And, where one goes, all go, really, because there's so many growth opportunities for all three of those businesses. Jeff, do you want to take the quiz?
Yeah, sure, on the quiz. It's a very large exercise. There's at least sort of 18 type scenarios. So, difficult to I think as an industry and commentators to draw too much from that and from discussions with PRA, they're very much looking on some specific areas where they want to have numbers, a wide range so that they can find an answer somewhere in the middle, in simplistic terms. And there are lots of other areas they're looking at which are more qualitative and to do with process and what assets are allowed, etc., or where they already have extensive data. So these are specific areas where they're looking for extra information in terms of, okay, in a range of scenarios, what could that mean so that they can feed that in. It's very hard to draw any more from that, but we get the same positive noises from them around risk margin and sort of assets being allowed into matching adjustment portfolio. They just a lot of things they don't need to test at this stage, but there's a range of things where they do want to get some numbers back. So, there isn't more conclusion than that at this stage.
Yeah, I articulate the PRA approach has been balanced and measured. I don't think they want to have any sorts of shocks to the industry, and that certainly they have been supportive of the initiatives that we've been having and discussions we've been having about investing in real assets in the real economy. I have a degree of empathy sympathy for my colleagues because it looks a huge amount of work. And to Tim Steadman and others, it's going to be an enormous amount of work between now and October. And it's just, you know, I think the PRA want to do a very thorough exercise, but we expect the outcome to be balanced and measured and not to have a material impact on our business going forward. I'll now hand over to Andrew Crean from Autonomous.
Good morning, all. Three questions or three areas. Firstly, would you give us the updated Solvency II coverage figure post the fall in yields in July? And can you talk to us about what the ceiling is in terms of when you'd look either at inorganic or capital returns, 180% as it is for peers? Secondly, on LGC, I think the alternative assets have grown at a CAGR of 29% over the last 4.5 years, and you've got, to hit your 5 billion target, it's a CAGR of only 9% going forward. Do you think that that's a bit too conservative? And then thirdly, it's clear from your final slide of the presentation, you're somewhat exercised about Legal & General's valuation, and I can understand why. Are you still happy to leave it to public markets to find the right level for legals, or do you think you're moving to a situation where you may need to look at slightly more dramatic actions, whether it's selling off minorities or bringing in private capital?
Yeah, if Jeff takes the first one, I'll take the second two.
Yeah, hi, Andrew. In terms of the ratio, it's basically broadly unchanged. You know, as you say, rates fell a bit, but obviously we have had surplus generation since then. So, you know, within the usual sort of plus or minus a couple of percent, it's broadly unchanged. There hasn't really been much that's moved otherwise, apart from rates and surplus generation. In terms of ceiling, yeah, we don't, as you know, like to give the ranges around that. There's a whole host of reasons why, a number may not be appropriate at a point in time. You know, the big picture, we obviously continue to make ROEs at 20% plus, so believe, you know, investing back in the business makes sense for us. And you, as you comment on the DI, maybe 9%, we can go faster, see what Nigel says now. But there's always ways to deploy the capital to make good returns, but equally it does depend why you've got to that level. You know, it could be 190% for a, you know, just simply because rates had increased. You know, is that right? What's our view on downsides from there, et cetera? You know, so it very much depends why you've got to a level and how sustainable what your plans are around that in terms of what we would think to do with the capital.
Could I ask on that? Would you be able to give us, in terms of the operating surplus generation or the surplus generation, a split between what's going on in the equity-owned funds and the SCR separately? It's quite helpful, that.
Looking with a view to IFRS 17 and everything else, and generally looking at S2 disclosures, we are sitting down post-holidays to consider what we might do around that.
Brilliant. Thanks.
Okay. On the second point about alternative assets, Andrew, you sound like me. You should take that as a compliment around that. Yes, indeed, you know, the maths say that we could grow faster going forward. This is our plan from last year, and we've just repeated it here. But there's certainly the businesses have performed better than our expectations, to be honest about it, right across the board. I think there's a lot of third-party equity that can be brought in at that private level, which is really, in part, the answer to three. In a sense, it's much easier to get equity into later life living and get a fair valuation for that, or into many of our other businesses, built to rent or whatever, and earn fees from it, than necessarily getting the recognition from the public markets. And the point that we were making earlier on is that there's now a big delta between alternative assets, or people with a broad approach to assets and the valuation of them. And there's a whole bunch of American firms that are beginning to look more like us, ironically, that have a much higher multiple than we do right now. And we're on this journey from being a you know, a traditional insurance company, and we've sold off, you know, a huge amount of our assets in the last, you know, 10 years and repositioned ourselves to be a modern investment management company, of which insurance forms an incredibly important part. You know, we have a whole series of liabilities, you know, pension liabilities, insurance liabilities, climate liabilities, of which to create assets to manage against those liabilities. And they offer us enormous growth opportunities, not just here in the UK, but increasingly internationally. And we're busy recruiting people and investing in activities that should continue to deliver the great returns that we've seen over the last 10 years. We think at some point the public markets will catch up with that. You know, we're you know, a little bit frustrated, but not massively frustrated about it, because, you know, we recognize that we have to deliver more. We have to give greater transparency, which is what we're going to do with LGC in October, and what Jeff and the team are sitting down to do post the summer on Solvency II. Next question is from Greg at KBW.
Morning, everybody. Three quick questions. Sorry, my normal question is, I wonder if you could just talk about, in the first half, what the sort of downgrade experience has been on in the triple B asset range backing LGR, and, you know, because things have improved, you know, what the outlook in the second half for downgrades are as it pertains to the solvency ratio. Second point is, in the US, on your term life business, you are rolling out your UK, call it fintech/digital expertise, which seems to be making a difference. My question is you really have a very large market share. Is that a constraint on what you can grow, or are you going to go to, or do you have the capacity to go into, say, other mortality type products, different distribution channels, whatever, and sort of the sky's the limit there? And the third question is, just in terms of your own company's debt and leverage, are you planning to issue any further debt in the next 12 months? Thank you very much. Jeff?
Jeff can take the second and third. On downgrades, we haven't really had downgrades. As you rightly pointed out, Greg, we're on an upgrade trend right now. And so, we can't be totally confident that trend is going to consider given what's happening in the pandemic. But the sectors where there have been problems have not, as we've articulated before, have not been problems. And our cash coming into our assets has remained at the very high 99.89%. And we're confident we'll continue to deliver at that sort of level. Do you want to take the other two questions, Jeff?
Yeah, sure. US term, that's right. Yeah, we've been effective in rolling that out. That obviously was very good timing with pandemic and people looking to move away from paper transactions, et cetera. We're seeing delivery on that. And it was interesting, one of the points you made, yeah, I mean, that in itself is changing the way distribution is done. There's a number of very strong tech-based, well, they're past being startups now, they have significant sales volumes, and we're quite often either sole tie or the main partner with a number of these that are growing the market. They're in themselves a different distribution to the traditional brokers. They're advertising to completely different segments of the market, and they want the sort of straight-through processing that we're offering, much faster turnaround times of putting business on the books, and that is... That is definitely paying dividends for us. We're seeing increased volumes and, you know, continuing to grow. You're right. I mean, being number one in the broker market would have a limit, but the broker market is completely changing, and there are new entrants that are pushing this and expanding the market. We believe we can push that further. So, you know, there's a long way to go on that before we would need to look at different products, etc.
Did Greg use the expression "the sky's the limit" there?
Yeah.
You know, I don't believe that. So.
The debt. You know, you'll have seen the slides which show the debt reducing over time. You know, the constant growth of the balance sheet gives us lots of optionality around that. Obviously, at 80+ solvency, very, very strong liquidity. You know, we wouldn't need to do that. You never say never, but, you know, that wouldn't be our plans at the moment. I think it's safe to say, given the position that we're in.
Yeah, I mean, the question more after looked at the Fitch ratio and the various rating agencies' ratios, and it didn't look like there's a lot of headroom until you sort of grow the denominator. I was just trying to understand within the current situation whether there is headroom.
As in my presentation, and I think I say it, actually the leverage is lower than it's been in the last sort of 3.5 years. Down now, I think post the 300 million, we're about 26 on the Moody's, 30 on the Fitch, and those reduce constantly, you know, as the balance sheet grows. So, you know, there would be, we don't feel like we need to issue at this stage, but we definitely have headroom should we want to do that. But we see it reducing over time, and then choosing opportune moments to optimize shareholder returns, rather than anything else driving what we would do around that.
Yeah, it's a great slide in the pack, which we'd encourage you all to read on page 30, 31, which shows how much the leverages have fallen over time and will continue to fall out to 2024, which is very helpful guidance, I think. Next question is from Ming at Panmure.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my question. Just two questions, please. First is on the LGCs. You've got a target of the 14 billion third-party capital. Now, that is double of where you are now. And how much of that, could you just give color in terms of, you know, how do you expect to achieve that? And how much of that would depend on for you to achieve your 8 to 10% per annum blended portfolio return? And my second question on the solvency ratio. Your solvency ratio has been very strong, you know, on all the reported dates. But it's really, you know, for example, last year, it's really the volatility in between. I mean, what is the really sort of the minimum solvency ratio that will keep you comfortable and while keeping the regulator happy so that you can still pay out the dividend? Thank you.
I'm certainly going to let Jeff answer the second question. On the first one, you know, the 8 to 10% return is related to the money that we put into these investments, and that's, as Andrew was saying, that's risen quickly over the last few years. Since at 3.4 billion, we want to make that 5 billion. That's us as a principal investor. As an agency, you know, we've identified that we'll rapidly increase the fees and the assets from external, so that will bring us up to 20 billion or above. You know, Andrew, I guess, has the same view that I have about the opportunities we have for doing that right now. So, you know, we've got two sources of profit. You know, the revenue that we get from third parties, but also the return on the assets that we invest as a principal ourselves. Jeff, do you want to take the second one?
Yeah, sure. I mean, a bit like not having a maximum. We don't have a minimum either. I mean, it was a pretty strong message last year. You know, we were in the, 170s and, you know, low 170s at times. We paid the dividend. We maintained that whilst modelling some very, very adverse credit scenarios and handing those to the regulator. The board putting a lot of scrutiny on that. We know what our adverse scenarios look like. We've talked about that many times. We build up from that sort of minimum level to then give us the flexibility we require, and that moves around depending on the sort of subjective view of how big stresses can be, where are you at any point in time, and so it moves to some extent, which is why we don't set the absolute ranges. But, you know, we've never been anywhere near the levels where we would be having concerning conversations with regulator or the board around the solvency.
Yeah, thanks. You know, in general, the LGAS solvency ratio is about 20% lower than the group ratio, and so, you know, the regulators obviously sees a different number from the number that you're seeing when they look at the regulated businesses. We have one last question, last but not least, from Dominic at XN BNP. Dominic, have I missed one? More, and then followed by Steve at HSBC.
Hi there. Hi, thanks, Nigel. Three questions from me, if that's okay. Firstly, I'm really pleased to hear you're thinking about Solvency II disclosures. I think they would be really useful, especially as we go into IFRS 17. In the meantime, could you just give us some sense of what proportion of the operating surplus generation is management actions? I realise that's a bit of a loose category, but anything you could say on what proportion would be very helpful. Secondly, I think there was a comment about some of the reinsurance you might normally have done in H1 being deferred into H2. I imagine that that meant that the new business strain would have been higher in H1 than you would expect it on a normal course of events. What would be the IFRS impact? Would there be like another positive or negative in H2 if you then update the reinsurance? And then thirdly, just on lifetime mortgages, well, I think it's lifetime mortgages and retirement mortgages now. Volumes, I think, are up on last year, but I think they're still sort of down versus pre-pandemic times. Curious to hear your view on the outlook for that business line. Do you think that's going to recover in H2 and into 2022 and beyond? Thank you.
Jeff, take the first two questions. I'll take the third.
Yeah, in terms of management actions in OSG, it's relatively minimal amount. We always factor some things we know we're doing in terms of, I don't know, we may have warehoused on other liability. We choose to do some reinsurance. We know we're going to do that. As you say, it's a very broad category. But it's relative.
Thank you for your patience, everyone. We have reconnected the speakers. Please resume.
So this is Steve now from HSBC.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for squeezing me in. Three questions here. First one was on your third-party capital, 6.8 billion now, obviously grown strongly in the first half from 5.2 billion at the beginning of the year. I really want to know what sort of revenue margin you're receiving in terms of the fees from this third-party capital stream. So we can sort of look at what it might be when it reaches the 14 billion mark in a few years' time as well. Secondly, you've previously given some information about the pipeline of UK PRT. I wonder if you can talk about LNG's pipeline. I know you've mentioned the 2 billion pretty much done in July, but if you can give some more guidance on the rest of the year, that would be very useful. And then finally for me, on the operating profit guidance, it's obviously based off of the 2 billion base level, but I'm wondering if you can be a bit clearer on the percentage range you're looking at. Are you sort of looking at 10 to 20%, 20 to 30%, or we're not obviously talking about a 90% double-digit growth rate, but, maybe I'm being a bit facetious on the last question, but thank you.
I'll take the first one. Do you want to take the second and third, Jeff? On the first one, the fee range is between about 50 basis points to 150 basis points across the different asset classes. Clearly, the mix, we can't be certain as to what the mix is going to be going forward, but there's a healthy pricing range for those assets. Yeah.
Pipeline is very strong. It's not dissimilar to the numbers we've given in the past. It's of that order of up to 20 billion that we see, but obviously a number of those deals, which we're now seeing, which is stronger than we probably thought at the start of the year, some of those will naturally flow into next year as well. Given the 2 billion one and exclusives, we're in a strong place coming into the second half, or post-holiday second half, if you like. They obviously executed very well in July. And so we are comfortable that we don't necessarily need to be hitting 8 to 10 billion with the good quality assets we've got to get to the metrics we anticipate for this year and hit the metrics we need. And so we can look at what's the best business out there, what's the most advantageous to us to build on top of that fire. So there's plenty out there coming from a strong position. If the market's 20 to 25, we keep our market share, we get a good level of new business volume on the back of that. The op profit, I don't think I'd be giving too much away to say we don't particularly anticipate doing 20 to 30% profit growth overall. You never know. But, we're clearly talking, what we've done historically has always been 10% plus, 14% in the first half. You know, those are the sorts of numbers we talk about when we say double digit.
Okay. Thank you to everyone for participating in the call this morning. I think there's a great variety of questions, which is from Jeff and my point of view, it's really kept us on our toes during the presentation. We look forward to seeing everyone, hopefully in person, at the LGC Capital Markets Day in October. We remain very confident about our capabilities to continue to deliver great returns for shareholders on a go-forward basis. And we're very happy with our portfolio of business. I think as we've alluded to, I think you should expect some further announcements on us bringing third-party capital into various parts of LGC, continuing to make very good progress in terms of executing LGIM's strategy around diversify and internationalize. But also, Jeff just talked about a very solid performance that we're going to see and continue to see from our PRT business. And retirement solutions business has been going from strength to strength, as indeed has LGI, particularly in the United States. So it's taken us a long time to get the portfolio into the shape it is today, and you can see the outstanding results that portfolio is driven by tremendous people efforts right across our organization. So look forward to seeing you in October.